Ready? We'll call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, November 7th, 2018, at 8:52 on the clock. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Opens Meeting Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The consent agenda: one is general agenda, two is approved minutes of the meeting held October 24, 2018, three, approve all claims through November 7, 2018, in the amount of $654,880.73, except claim number 18110160 to R.L. Tiemann Construction in the amount of $9,533.97 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on court on file correspondence received. Approve district court summary fee report and register of deeds fee report for the month of October 2018. That was number five. Number six, approve utility permit number 115 for Magellan Midstream Partners LP. Will be excavating 12 foot wide, 5 foot deep, approximately 10 foot into the road to do maintenance on existing 6 inch refined product pipeline located in the northeast and the northwest fourth of section 15, township 4 north, range 6 east of Midland Township. Number 7, approve specs and call for bids for a new roof on the detention center. And those will be opened at on December 5th, 2018 at 9:30.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Second. Any questions or comments? And Dave did come up with some kind of proposal for the bids for the roof on the jail, and that comes from the hail damage and stuff. I've been working with insurance company on that. So no more questions. Vote. 7-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 18110160 to R.L. Tiemann Construction in the amount of $9,533.97. This brings the total amount of claims approved through November 7th, 2018 to $664,414.70.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Hill. Vote. 6 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. And seeing only people in the audience, county employees, we're going to move on.
In my best Forrest Gump. And just like that, nobody was interested in county government again.
Committee reports. Building ground, winter lights. Dave?
Hey, Dave. Come right on up.
Good morning, Dave.
Good Dave morning. Jones, the general of the courthouse.
The items that we had during the building and grounds committee reports, the roof, I would like to just have on the bid specs. During the committee reports, we did talk about possibly taking bids for a metal roof also. And after giving it some more thought and talking to some people, I found out there's a lot of variables that might interfere. The person I talked to recommended that if we did do a metal roof, that we should actually have a plan so the bidders would bid off of a plan. Uh-huh. And I talked to Noakes also about removing their air conditioning. And it is, you know, kind of changes a simple job into a more complicated thing. So I recommended that we just stay with a membrane type roof. This bid spec is off of the 2005 re-roof bid project. I just made some changes as far as the old style called out for a ballast roof. So I went with just a EPDM type roof or a thermoplastic roof, which is actually what we have now. We have a Duralast roof that falls into the thermoplastic type roof. And so I made the addition on that. I also had where there'd be two options to be bidded separately. Sounds like the insurance company, Bill Hilton, said that we will should be getting complete repair costs for the flat roof, but if we added tapered insulation to get better drainage, or there's a product called Dexcel, it's like an underlayment to put underneath that roof that would help with if there is hail damage. It gives it a harder surface so it doesn't sink down into that foam, and that helps a lot. So those are two recommendations that we can add to this also, but that these two options will not be covered under
They would
insurance.
Be county's cost
yes.
to add those options.
Correct.
Makes sense.
So we can take a look at that when we get
those. Because they're basically going to pay to replace the roof the way it is.
They would replace exactly what we have now, yes. And then the other thing that we talked about was is going to come up on the agenda would be the purchase of the alley between the bus stop and sheriff's office.
Yeah.
Last but not least is, as you can see, they're changing light bulbs as we speak. So we're getting ready for the holiday lights. It's kind of been a slow progression on this. We've had some wet weather, so we've had to stay off the yard. Hopefully we can get through the next couple days without any more moisture and get them all changed. I think he worked on it a good part of the day yesterday and got most of the north side done. So.
And that's not this weekend, but
no,
next weekend?
No, it is next weekend. This weekend will be the veterans flags will go up on Sunday this year. So, and it's supposed to be a nice day on Sunday, so... happen. That's all I have.
Veterans Day is so. They'll just be up on Sunday.
On Sunday, yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So Veterans Day. So good deal. Anything else for Dave? Denny?
Nope. He takes care of everything. He and his staff are absolutely fantastic. I can't say enough for how wonderful they are in taking care of this building and all the rest of the property.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Equalization. Nothing. Finance insurance.
Large ticket items. Amen Law, professional legal services, $14,300. Bryan Medical Center, inmate medical, $10,126.80. Dawson County Sheriff, boarding inmate, $16,605. Department of Correctional Services, boarding inmates and medical, $25,931.55. Election software, $20,054.58. Keating, O'Gara, Nedved, and Peter. Legal Services, $10,609.29. Beatrice Concrete Ready Mix Concrete $38,855.30. Manelli Wagner and Associates Engineering Consulting $33,339.82. Midwest Sales Company Service and Sales Company Concrete Slabs and Steel $89,694.78.
Galen, the one from Beatrice Concrete, that was concrete on the bridge down there, or was that gravel?
That had been gravel.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Beatrice Concrete Ready Mix. Gravel.
Oh.
$38,855.30.
Quest
up concrete.
Huh?
Yeah. And the Keating O'Gara, that's our insurance lawyers, that the bill from them, and they are going to be down here at approximately 10 o'clock and stuff. So visit about the insurance, the two court things we've had come, and then visit about maybe where we're going at with any of it or all of it or whatever. So told them that they would be in public session and stuff. So human resource employee relations.
Nothing,
John. Law enforcement emergency management.
Gus, do you have any of this you wanted to talk about? I'd like to talk a little more about the school resource officer, but...
Yeah, that's... well, there's something else that Larry and Eric and I talk about, I'm going to address too, but really...
anything really of any major interest is we had an engine that we're going to have to replace on one of the 2013 Dodges. Had another one that had some extensive suspension work have to get done to it. Of course, our fundraiser for Shelf Cops starting off, and we're going to have that annual one with the Eagles Club on January 5th with their chili cook-off. And so it'll be a gun raffle again this year on that. And then we're talking about some kind of pay increase for part-time kitchen help. They're making about $9.50, and I was almost appalled when I heard that. No wonder I'm going through so much part-time help. That's just nothing for somebody that's got to be there off and on all times of the year. So we're looking at what everybody else is paying, see if we can help them a little bit on that end. And then, of course, Narcan is for the opioid overdose. I purchased some of that through Region 5 on grant. We have it on hand now. I'm just waiting to get the training done here later this month at the college, and then I'll issue out. And I'd finished up my policy yesterday, so we should be ready to go on that as well. So, other thing that I gave to and it wasn't on here typed up, but I think I mentioned to everybody. I talked to Roger today as well. We're having some concerns out there in High 103 with Tri-County School. I sit on the safety committee with them, and the meeting we had last week addressed some concerns we're having. Like I told Roger, try to do anything with signage will be an act of God to do to the state on something there. So we were a meeting with the sheriffs from the two other counties today to see if we can figure something out to where we can kind of be on that section road a little more often to provide a little bit of deterrent for speed. They've had one bad accident and another one that could have been really bad. And so we're going to address it, see what we can do with it anyway. We don't know, but we're looking at that. The other thing I want to touch base on that I talked to Eric and Myron about is apparently some of you have been contacted by the public about the man cave we have across the alley and now the new building. And so I took Myron over there, and I took him in the old garage area and the new part. And I want to assure the board, and so they can tell the public, and I would really wish they'd come to me, nothing is after being done over there that wasn't done in the garage base we had. It's training area. It's storage area. We work on equipment. We do evidence. It's the exact same thing. The only things that are they're over there that aren't over here, we had about two or three freestanding shelf units we put on the walls so we could store tires and mats, bulky things, up instead of taking up all the room on the floors. Now, a lot of that comes, I know, from they think that there's probably a TV in there and they got a break room and all that, which there is not. What it's going to be is they're going to see cars there like they would over here from time to time because they all are brought in to work on equipment. The IT person, Norm down here at City, worked on all of them one day to work on the new upgrade for mobile data. There's all the cars are there that day. There today we had them in there. They were certifying an annual certification on tuning forks and radars, so all cars would be there for that. Another day we had a bunch of them down there because we had a vendor from Omaha down working on some of the lights that were not working on the cars. So I want to assure you that that's being used for the exact same purpose as it was on the old garage area. If anyone wants to come in and look, they certainly can do that. Anytime they ask, I can get you in there except for the evidence side. So I hope that addresses that for everybody and then let people know, and that's for the record. Right from the horse's mouth.
Man cave?
That's what they're calling it, I guess, yeah.
We had a conversation Monday at committee meeting about some comments that were heard, and so I went over and visited with Gus, and we went over and looked at it and stuff. And outside of the two Hummers in there that are taking up a fair amount of room.
Which was over there, too.
Yeah,
there
it was over here, too. Yeah. Yeah, it.
Gus, how many times have those Hummers gone out on calls?
Not actual calls, not yet, but could next storm. Of course, how many times I've drawn my gun, too, in 45 years. That's the key. Yeah. One can probably be gone. It was just a good deal. The other one, the problem, you can't lock them, so I can't put them outside. The one has a lot of equipment already ready to go for it. But
some of us had heard comments there was a TV over there, and there is no TV over there. No. That is down in the part of the jail. In the, I call it kind of the office of the jailer.
That's not hooked up the cable.
So, no.
There probably is a TV over there in evidence.
Yeah, probably TV there, yeah.
Yeah. But
sometimes that's how these things get started.
Well, and they have to understand it's really going to be more inconvenient for the employees with this new building than it is now, because if we end up doing something in the West Garage area, a lot of that goes away out front for parking. Now, that's going to be for handicapped, town inspections, and public. So that means we're going to go a half block every time from the office to over there and back. So, but you'll never hear that from the public because they just don't understand it yet. It's still a new concept. So,
is that engine in that one? Can we drop that in that Dodge? We'll pull the engine out of that one Hummer you say we don't need.
That's a diesel. I don't think the motor mounts it. It's a GM product.
It's amazing how many times you hear those that phrase and that brand, though, drop engine and die.
Anyway, I want that officially on the record.
Yeah.
So, Gary, you want to talk about SRO?
Yeah, have you had the opportunity to talk to the three different school districts?
And yes.
How is that conversation going?
Thank you for bringing that up. As you probably should have known, I think I told you, on the new budget I had prepared, that was one of the deputies I had coming in was a school resource officer. That was one of the things I cut to bring the budget down. So I met last week with all three county superintendents about going in the partnership with a school resource officer for the three counties we have. And, of course, they were more than willing to want to do it. They understand the value to an SRO in the schools now, especially with the issues we're having. The problem they're going to have, just like I do occasionally here, you have a board with several members on, they have to talk to them about it. Some of the fear is going to be to think, well, if we're going to spend money for that, why not just have an armed security guy walking around the halls? School resource officer is not about that. The biggest part of it is becoming part of the educational community and bonding with the kids and the staff and administration, where more problems will probably be brought up and you'd hear about them. So my proposal to them was, I'd had the figures for them, what a deputy's wage and salary package would be, benefit package. They would share that in thirds. Then I would try to do the vehicle, the training, and the equipment is the way I had to propose it to them. So they took that back. We're going to sit on it through the holidays, and I'll probably schedule a meeting with them probably mid-January and kind of see where you stand on it. It's probably going to be, I'm sure, a tough road to hoe for them, but I want to try it anyway and see what happens because I can see the value. I also was able to have one of the school resource officers from Beatrice come down for the meeting and had a lot of input and good comments on it, questions they had, and there's just no doubt it's what it's done for them there. That's why they have a second one in the city now over at the middle school. So that's.
Sheriff, you said that the way you do that the way you propose that would be you would pay for vehicle equipment and training, and they would cover the labor between the two of them?
Labor, three of them.
Three of them.
The labor and the benefit package, right? So it'd be a wash. Then I just hire another deputy to replace him on the road. So hopefully it'd be kind of cost neutral, I'm hoping was my plan, but I could just put it out there. We're just going to see what they want to do with it and kind of go from there. If not, worst case scenario, already got him trained up for the initial training on it. He'll just stop by the school from time to time when he's not on calls or patrolling and just give our best shot, I guess, all we can do. So.
And that is an issue with Gage County. We have the highest critical incidents with our youth in all of the 16-county area. The Region 5 system's covered, and I know they're in contact with you and working with you on how we can make some changes to correct that, and resource officers is one of those issues. But it's really terrible to go to a meeting and find out Gage County and offenders and so many things is the highest of all the 16 counties.
Well, I think I went back to numbers from the 1st of January to about last month. We had, I think, 12 calls for service to Adams, 13 to Weimar, Blue Springs, and I think 3 or 4 to Odell. And two incidents were of major consequences. It involved just some threats and some weapons and some comments. Makes you real uneasy anymore the way things are around the country. So I wanted to at least try to address that best we could on it. So that's
what we talked about.
Part of that is contributing, unfortunately, to the suicide incidents that we're having in our county.
We talked about that at the community justice meeting last week, and we looked at funding through the grant program with the
Cops
Commission because they're going to have some extra money this year.
State Crime Commission?
Yeah. I mean,
I knew Cops. That's how
both SROs got started in Beatrice school system. Yeah. It was grant system, and then.
But don't they have to pick up the fourth yet? The city had to pick up the full amount on the wage?
Well, after the initial.
Right, after three, yeah.
It gives you a chance to, number one,
up and going.
It's going to work, tweak it, and because, again, they work from a part-time situation, and I think, I believe Officer Byrne was the first resource officer at the high school. It went very well.
It went very well.
At some point, he went to almost full-time, except during the summer, obviously, and then they brought in the middle school.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's been an exceptional program.
I just think that's something we can sort of look at because I mean, scratching her head, how to use some of that money as far as if we get some extra.
Yeah, a bigger way of doing it.
Something that,
well, I was thinking of the mental health side because Randy Page up there, Superintendent and Adams, thought we could use some of that mental health money on that, but I don't know if it's practical to be able to do that. I don't know.
Well, some of it, again, as we talked about, you know, talking about personnel in the school system, at what point is that a school issue versus a law enforcement issue? And that line gets a little blurred once in a while, and that's why you need the folks to work together.
Absolutely.
Tim Price and Zach Lowenstein do a real good job with here.
Yeah, they do a very good job. And it's not all about arrests and tickets. It's working with them and trying to stay off some problems before it happens.
Listening and being able to prevent issues.
That's right. Exactly right. Yep.
I think our new superintendent is very aware of those things also, and he wants to communicate with you and with the PD relative to these issues on what we can do. So that's a very good thing that we have that positive relationship now.
Very much. Hey, thank you.
Anything else? I'll just make a comment. When Lisa was here in emergency management, she talked a little bit about the zoning activity has been really strong in the county or whatever, so she's getting a lot of inquiries and a lot of permits. Other than that, she didn't have numbers for us or anything, but she said she's been very busy with that.
So. Well, emergency management also, she's able to get those guys working on the tower in a little bit quicker. So that proposal she showed us Monday, they'll be moving forward with that.
Oh, up there at Adams to move that to the new water tower.
So, I mean, all that equipment, I mean, there's some expense with that. Yeah. I think there's $11,000, which was somewhat reduced because they were sharing that tower crew. But they're actually going to move forward with that a little quicker than she thought.
A lot of wires.
The village Adams should pay for that, right?
They're paying for the water tower, and not.
Oh, okay.
The water tower. It's amazing what a water tower costs anymore nowadays, or whatever.
I go, geez.
I'm sure they used to be cheap, Byron.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. Water tower anymore isn't cheap, or whatever. And stuff. The cost of those are so. Keep hearing the numbers, and you go.
Is this something
wow,
to talk about, or what?
That much. So. But you know, Claytonia and Cortland have put one up too in the last few years. Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay, Road and Bridge.
Last week, we painted the 3 miles that were milled on Hill Highway. Round three of the Bridge Match program is due November 30th. Galen has turned in a list of 2 bridges, 4 box culverts, and 3 culvert projects. Odell box culvert was done October 4th. Last week, all seating was done. Collins is done with their part of the project. Galen has visited with them about damage to the pavement south of the project. We'll turn in a cost estimate to Minnelli, and we'll visit with Collins about paying for the work to be done. The project is finished, or Collins is finished with his side of it, but the county... Galen and I, probably a month ago, Galen said, hey, the window's getting short to get the black topping done and all that kind of stuff. I said, Galen, because harvest is strung out and it's pretty main source coming to Odell. I said, Galen, I'd just soon let it set. And Galen agreed with me, kind of like what was done over there on Hickory Road. Huh. It won't be that long before it gets fixed again. But next spring we'll be looking at finishing the overlay over the bridge and repairing the part to the south that was damaged. So,
because the county part of this project was that the county was going to do the pavement, relaying the pavement and all that. So that right now that plan is to leave that till spring, next summer.
And it's a good surface. I mean, smooth.
And we've had enough rain; it's all got packed in.
Yeah. And I'm sure over the winter, you know, freeze and thaw, you're going to see some settlement. So I'd say it's a let it set for now. All right. had discussion on county blacktops and roads for future overlay projects, new state requirements, and Galen has priced a used pup trailer, waited to hear from insurance company on the settlement. Do you have anything else, Galen?
I just realized where your copy is in the trays. I'm having Michelle bring the rest of them over.
Okay, that's
right. Over last night.
All right. That's it. All
right. I knew I'd make copies.
You had something else on your mind or what?
Yeah. Just all of a sudden it just occurred to me, I think there's more pages in their trays.
Yeah. Anything else for Rowan Bridge?
You haven't heard anything back from the railroad or the railroad police or anybody yet either, have you?
No.
No, for the accident, I'm sorry.
For the pup trailer accident on the railroad up there, North Adams. Mm-mm.
Thanks.
Should we be recontacting them and ask them why we aren't hearing anything?
That'd be a good idea.
Yes.
Did you catch that, Galen? Denny asked, should we be contacting them to know why we haven't heard anything, or ask why we haven't heard anything yet on that up there?
Absolutely. I think we should follow through with that and push. Let's push.
Anything else for Rowan Bridge? I think you said we had, what, one township left to gravel?
There's actually two tickets out that we're working on. I don't know how far they've got on that, but I'll say two tickets are out to do yet.
Looks like they'll be done this year, though.
They'll be done this year. That's
maybe
good.
This month? This week?
That would be a long time since that's been done all same year, so good deal and stuff. So no, and I think you said there's still product out there to be available to pick up and deliver. So good deal. Anything else for Rowan Bridge? Now we'll move on. Next item on the agenda is approve or disapprove agreement between City of Beatrice and Gage County for the vacated east-west alley between Washington and Lincoln Street and between 6th and 7th Street in the amount of $1,000.
I would make a motion to approve.
I'll second that.
Second that. Motion by Bauman, second by Hill. Go ahead, Eric.
I talked to Rick Claybaugh. I left a message for the mayor, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him. And it's kind of like we discussed the other day. There's certain people that think that there should be a higher dollar amount allocated for stuff like this. I would still say even without talking to the mayor, I would still say we approve this with the dollar amount at $1 for transfer, and see how that goes. I really don't think the money's the issue. It's more they needed a price, and so they put something in there. I doubt that they really are looking to get $1,000 here.
In 2012, they had a similar situation involving an alley. It was $1,000. And even though we're not Methodists, we're getting the same price. That's a joke.
Yeah.
Some of us may be Methodists.
But this is between municipalities.
They just put a number on it. And, we could have standard appraising if you want to, or Lloyd. But, again, it's on the books. And I'm just saying there's a prior incident where the city and a third party worked it out. It was $1,000. So you raise a good concern, but seriously. Yeah.
Well, I'm like Eric. I think it's totally ridiculous. As much as we do for the city, and we're supposedly cooperating with each other, and then we should be paying them $1 instead of $1,000, and this is absolutely ridiculous. But I just have to voice my opinion. I totally agree with you. I think they're taking advantage of us, and makes me very upset.
I'm sure it's unintentional. They just needed a number. But I would make a motion to amend the motion.
Matt's got the motion. I don't disagree that maybe this should be a dollar, but there's some value for us to have that alley, and I think we should go ahead and improve it like it is.
There's some value for them not to maintain it anymore, too, though.
Well, there is. There is.
Yeah, Matt has the motion, so...
I'd like to make a motion to amend the motion.
Is there a second?
There's a motion and a second on...
But I'd like to make a motion to amend the motion to leave to approve this, just changing the price to $100 in lieu of $1,000.
Matt and John did the second on the original motion, so we have that motion. But you have to have a second now. We need
second.
So this time, Eric made the motion to amend the motion from $1,000 to $100, and Denny seconded that.
It's still more than $1, but it's less than $1,000. I mean, it's more process for us than anything else. And I'm sure the city's more looking at needing a dollar amount to go with. I don't think the city's trying to hit us with it. I mean, it's a benefit to both of us.
Anybody talked with the city?
He tried, but really didn't.
City attorney.
Yeah, they gave you that.
Nobody talked to him.
This came from the city manager, the city attorney. So, I mean, we didn't sit down and jostle price.
Talking to a councilman, the councilman I talked to said that the dollars aren't the issue, but they need something, you know, for transfer. But that's only one councilman I talked to, not the entire
and
council.
I haven't talked to anybody either about it, so I don't know.
I mean, I guess I'm saying if our county attorney has talked with them, and their price come off previous or prevalent practices of what they've done.
I think that's what
you're coming from, but gosh, I just...
As Gary said, the prevalent practice used to be $1 for all... you know, if that was even going back to homeowners and stuff. It was one of those when we transferred it from the city out and they weren't going to keep it anymore. It used to be just we needed a dollar so that there was a transfer price.
Terry?
What are any utilities going through that area?
Yeah. Yes, under the west half. Under the west half there is.
And they
know has sewer, but I don't know what else. There,
yeah, I don't
thought it seemed like electric or something too. Do you remember?
They would read.
There's a gas line that runs to the along the east side. And it used to go to the house. Since the house is gone,
don't have it.
So I don't know if it goes all the way to Lincoln Street or not. I'm sure that would be a deep line.
But no power, no sewer, no.
There's sewer. Yeah.
There would be sewer.
There was sewer, yeah.
The jail goes to the north, so.
And so they retained the right to go in there and repair whatever they had to repair,
yep.
I assume.
Easements would stay there.
Okay, Gary?
I guess my only thought is that we've spent how much time discussing this already, you know, and if we don't just move forward... yes, I believe that it should just be a dollar. I mean, it's not like it's a instrumental piece of property. It's an alley that's really the only reason the city has any need for it is for the easement ownership or not having anything on top of their lines or whatever that service our equipment, quite frankly. For our safety, for the jail, being able to secure the jail a little bit better, we just need to move forward and not waste any more time on this. If we approve the, as much as I agree that, you know, it should just be a dollar exchange on this, if we approve the $100 adjustment that Eric wants to go through with, which I agree with, no, I don't agree with because I think it should just be a dollar exchange. But, you know, if we do that, and then now it's got to go back to the city council and, you know, and then does it come a haggling session back and forth? Probably not, but do we really need to spend this much more time on this? That's all I'm saying.
Years ago, I watched the city council meeting, I think, where they were discussing the length of a dog leash and whether it should be 3 foot, 7 foot, 10 foot, 12 foot. I feel like we're kind of doing the same.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Yes,
it's $1,000. I get it.
Yeah. It's $1,000 dog leash, Matt.
The big dog.
Okay, we have. I think we have to vote on Eric's motion first, right? Though, because we had a second on that. That's, we need, because yeah, that's the dollar amount. Then. Amendment, yeah. And his motion is to change $1,000 to $100. So, any more comments or questions on that? Because if you vote for it, then we're going to change it to $100 instead of the $1,000. If you vote against it, then it will stay, and then we go back to the original motion.
And I want to get it done, but it's just a matter of principle on we're cooperating with them. But anyway, okay, I won't get into detail.
Any more comments? Otherwise, we're going to vote. Okay. John, 5 against Juergens Hill, Bauman, Dorn, and Lytle, and 2 in favor, Byers and Tiemann. So then that motion is defeated, so we leave $1,000 in there. Now we have the original motion that Matt made with John second to vote on the proposal as in the contract as presented, which is for $1,000, and then basically the alleyway will be the county, because we've had some issues with the jail and some other things, and that's why we Roger approached them and visited with them and come up with this contract. Any comments?
Oh, it is better access to the man shed now.
I am.
Okay, any more comments? If not, we're going to vote. Vote. 7-0 in favor. Approve or disapprove agreement between Maximus Consulting Service and Gage County for the completion of an indirect cost allocation plan and indirect rate computations for the period of fiscal year 2018-fiscal year 2020.
Approve the agreement.
You want to talk a little bit about this, Don, so we know maybe what it is,
Roger?
Basically, this is the agreement we have with this consulting firm. We've used it for several years now. They review the statistics and stuff from the district court, your authorized county attorney, Mr. Kravitz, who does child support, and we get a reimbursement from the state through their consulting work. And quite frankly, they service several counties. They do a good job for us, and I'm trying to remember how much money we get reimbursed. It's fairly significant.
Several thousands.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last one.
And again, there's no change in the price. The only tweaking on this was they're trying to get it to a calendar year versus what they have was like November or something. So it will track fairly well. But again, it's a service we get. And the contract basically is the same, other than it's a 3-year contract, which we had last time. I would recommend we get a benefit out of this, and they do a good job.
Which is kind of a sort of overall what they said that they do.
The indirect cost recovery for Gage County by Maximus. Yeah, we'll pass this around. Everybody can look at it. It's basically what they do and what they look at and how they work at getting some money back or whatever, or making sure it's.
The biggest thing that they do is they develop a rapport with the state, and they got their forms that they fill out, and then they go in and they actually meet with these people from the state, and they audit the submission of the information from the various counties. Yeah. So they do that as part of the contract for us.
I'd make a motion to
approve. Do you feel it's a good contract and something we need to do? I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
Motion by Byers, seconded by Lytle.
Or Matt, whatever.
Oh, I heard.
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
He did.
Oh, I quicker than he is.
Okay. That was the one I heard.
I'll withdraw my second. If I take it a more second.
Roger, do we need a motion for him to withdraw his second?
It wasn't seconded.
Oh.
It was a third.
Okay. You can put whoever you want.
And Jenny was in.
I have Lytle now.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Mr. Exactly. Chairman, it's falling apart.
I got him, though.
Okay. Any more comments?
Byers, motion, Lytle, second. Any problems? Okay, we're going with that one. All right.
Vote. 7-0 in favor. The only other thing I have on there, and I told Joel not not to be down here until 10 o'clock. Joel Nelson, Joel Bacon are going to be down because of our recent cases there with insurance issues, and they're going to be down to discuss that. We did put on a closed session down here, but I did tell them before they came down, and I think Don and I miscommunicated a little bit there, that we were going to have it in the public part of it first. They need to come down and update the board on where we sit and what these two court cases now mean going forward and stuff. So, and I don't know if we'll have a closed session or not. It depends on what, if they bring up something or have some issue that we want to. Otherwise, we won't have one. But the problem is, I apologize, they're not here yet. I told them 10 o'clock because I didn't know what would be on the agenda or whatever. So, trying to save money on lawyer fees, and now we're sitting here half an hour, so we're going to have...
You was too busy campaigning, weren't you, Myron?
Well, I know at times before we've had them down at 10:30, we barely get them in, you know.
And they'll be early.
And they'll be early. They've always been here early, so I expect them to be here by quarter till today and stuff. But
so we can recess?
So we're going to have a recess at 9:33 on the clock. We have our legal counsel here, so I think we can go ahead and we'll re-adjourn the meeting. We took a recess because we were done a little bit earlier, which we never know and stuff. So we're glad to have both of you guys here.
Look what we have here.
Back from recess at 9:56 on the clock. Well, Joel and Joel, thank you guys for coming, and I think visit with you a little bit about come down to give us an update on the two recent court cases of our insurance and where we're at, and see what we maybe are going to do from here or whatever. So,
okay. Well, thank you for having us back down. Congratulations to some of you in the room after yesterday. We've had some developments in both of the insurance coverage cases that you're probably aware of. Maybe I'll start in reverse order. So the most recent order we got was from Judge Nelson in District Court of Lancaster County, granting summary judgment for EMC Insurance. This is the case where arguably there's up to $4 million in coverage and then an argument for reimbursement of fees. The main issue is whether the sheriff's deputies would be considered professionals for purposes of EMC's coverages in effect back in 1989. And Judge Nelson decided, yes, they would be considered professionals, and therefore some exclusions applied, and so there's no coverage. EMC had filed for complete summary judgment. We had filed for partial summary judgment, asking her to find that under the terms of the policies, they would not be considered professionals, that EMC itself had really defined law enforcement as an occupation. So the real question in that case is going to be whether the board wants to appeal, and maybe in a little bit, after I get done with kind of the quick summary, Bacon can talk more specifically about the appellate process and what that might look like. He's the guy that we lean on for those things. A few weeks earlier, we got an order from Judge Nelson in the case against NIRMA, its excess carriers, and its reinsurer. This is the one that gets pretty thorny and pretty deep in the weeds pretty quickly. But the main issue there was raised by four excess insurers saying that the retroactive law enforcement liability coverage that we've talked about a number of times could not apply because the trigger date for that type of coverage for these types of civil rights claims would be when the members of the Beatrice Six were criminally charged, and that even though allegedly there were more bad acts after that, that for purposes of insurance coverage, that's when the trigger date for the coverage would be, the initial filing of the criminal charges. And we have that date of August 2, 1989, just as kind of a quick recap. When the county joined NIRMA in 97, there was some discussion about retroactive coverage, and so the law enforcement liability coverage had some retroactive component back to August 2nd, 1989, right smack dab in the middle of the year when the important events of the underlying criminal case happened. And so our argument against the summary judgment filed by the excess carriers was that things happened after August 2nd, 1989, with respect to some of the members of the Beatrice Six. That could mean that that coverage would apply. A couple of them had pled or agreed to plead guilty before August 2, 1989, and so we were really focused on the other four. Obviously, Joe White, right? He went to trial after August 2, 1989. Kathy Gonzalez agreed to plead after that date. Ms. Taylor pled after that date. Winslow pled only after White's trial. Again, the legal arguments get pretty Byzantine on that, and so we can go into more detail if we want to. But basically, what Judge Nelson said is that, consistent with the majority of courts who decided this issue around the country, the trigger date would be with the filing of the charges. All of them were charged before August 2, 1989, and so there is no way that those excess carriers who had excess coverage for that law enforcement liability coverage could possibly be on the hook for anything. So they won on that issue. Now, she didn't let them completely out of the case for kind of procedural reasons that, again, we can talk about if you want to. But that effectively put a big hole in our argument for coverage that may have had coverage potentially up to $15, $17 million if everything had gotten lined up properly. And no mistake here, if we had gotten past this motion, there would have been another round of motions by the excess carriers. They had other arguments, other hurdles that we would have needed to get over. NIRMA itself did not join in this round of motions. NIRMA has a similar argument on that law enforcement liability coverage. Now, we have some arguments with respect to NIRMA that have not been addressed in motions filed yet. And that would be the argument that NIRMA needed to provide a defense to the county under a different type of coverage, the public official liability coverage, and that if NIRMA should have done that, and if failing to do so was bad faith or a breach of a fiduciary duty to the county, that ought to mean liability for NIRMA under other theories. That's the theory that we've talked about being a little more unconventional, but it's alive. And Judge Nelson briefly mentioned that theory in her order in the NIRMA case, but only to the extent that she said she didn't think any bad faith by NIRMA would carry over to the excess carriers. But she didn't directly answer the question about the merits of our claim of bad faith or breach of fiduciary duty as to NIRMA itself. So, unless there are any questions right now, maybe I'll turn the microphone over to Bacon.
Oh. I got a question.
Yeah.
So the part with the excess carriers, where does that leave them at as far as this whole insurance? Are they completely gone then, or are they still involved in some legal aspect of it?
They're still parties to the case. They think it's pretty clear they shouldn't be. Reading Judge Nelson's order, she seems to be saying they probably shouldn't be in the case, but procedurally she couldn't cut them completely loose. So one other thing that we're going to do is to file an amended complaint ourselves. We want to clarify a few issues, but one of the things we would do in that amended complaint is squarely address the reason she apparently didn't think she could rule on that issue fully. In other words, it's coming. And rather than waiting for the excess carriers to file a motion for summary judgment and say, Judge Nelson, now we're asking you to take the final step, we think we can just put that issue right up front in an amended complaint. They can file another motion to dismiss or motion for judgment on the pleadings. And let's get that decided. It's coming, so we might as well deal with it sooner rather than later. We also just want to clean up a couple of other things in our amended complaint. Won't fundamentally change the claims that we're making. And at this point, then, going forward in the case against NIRMA, we will obviously focus more on the remaining claim or claims against NIRMA itself and how it did not provide a defense to the county, whether that means that it is obligated to indemnify the county, Searcy, Price. So they're still in it, but they don't think they should be, and they're going to try to get out as soon as they can.
The only thing I would hit on as a follow-up is just some procedural components to the appellate process. So on the EMC case, which is a separate case from the EMC case, we have 30 days from the date that order was entered to appeal, which we should consider to be the end of this month, which would be the 29th, is a Friday. So we would need, if the board intends to appeal that, we would need to go ahead by then. The NIRMA case is not in a position where there could be any appeal at this point in time. Within the appellate world, you have to have what's called a final order before you can appeal, and there isn't one yet. And there won't be until the other issues in the case are resolved. So that'll be down the line a little ways.
So I guess explain that a little bit more. If we don't appeal, then that part of the process is out.
If we don't appeal, the case against EMC would be done. There's no obligation at this point in time to appeal anything in the NIRMA case. We can't. It would be, it's not permissible at this point in time.
Joel, one of the questions or one of the responsibilities that the board has had to deal with was that we needed to pursue all avenues as far as protocol and getting maybe other people to help, other entities to help us. Does that enter into this? Have you spoke with the other attorneys that represent the county as far as, is this one of those, like, we need to appeal?
I have not. Joel, have you touched base with anything?
I just bring it up because, you know, we've gone through a lot of stuff and argued to protect the taxpayers, and if this is like, oh, you forgot to do this, oh, crying out loud, you know, in the scope of legal proceedings and expenses, this would be a very small, not that you weren't going to bill us, but relatively speaking, so I just want to make sure we don't miss that. If you think we should or we need to talk with Patton or their counsel on that issue.
We certainly think that appealing the decision in the EMC case makes sense. If you think about the potential recovery, let's say an upside of $4 million plus the attorney fees, which I think in the underlying case were over $1 million, we think it does make sense that we have a good faith argument that it's a relatively narrow legal issue. We certainly raised some arguments that we would raise to the Nebraska Court of Appeals or Supreme Court. So if one of the concerns is, has the board done everything it can to pursue all reasonable measures to get coverage, we do think that appealing the EMC summary judgment order makes sense from a dollars and cents point of view and from the point of view of just being able to say to all your constituents, yes, we are trying. And again, we don't really have to work through that analysis on any of the NIRMA issues at this point because, as Bacon is saying, nothing is ripe for appeal at this point.
I think just so for the board, your arguments, your cases are in front of Nebraska courts, district court, as opposed to the 1983 action, which Pat and those folks, that's federal court. So that is confusing, but I mean, it's a different system, different judicial people.
It is, and we've used the phrase a number of times throughout this process. We have good faith arguments to raise against NIRMA and against EMC, and part of the reason we phrase it that way is on all these issues, or most of these issues, we do not have a clear case from the Nebraska Supreme Court that we can point to say the court answered this question 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago. So we are in areas of uncertainty on all these legal issues, but we continue to say that we believe we have, and we will continue to pursue good faith legal theories against NIRMA and its carriers, and against EMC if the board chooses to appeal.
Don, just informally, we need you guys to say who you are and with what firm, because since it's recorded, we need it on, yeah.
I'm Joel Bacon with the firm of Keating, O'Gara, Nedved, and Peter, and this is my partner, Joel Nelson.
Nice to meet you guys.
Well, we know, yeah. We see you and we know who you are, but just if anybody ever listens to the tape and who are those guys or whatever and stuff. So,
other questions? Well,
how much of Nelson's decision was really based on the principle of law and how much was emotion?
That's impossible for us to know.
You know the judge, though.
The judge is she's careful and deliberate. Obviously, we think that there are matters on both of them that we could take to the next level, to another court, that we disagree with the conclusion she reached. But nothing strikes me as being the judge in any way acted improper.
Okay.
But you just said that then to appeal, you have to have your filings in by the end of this month on the 29th, or we have to make a decision to do it by then, and then you get an extension.
We would want to file on the 29th. And that's
want to file. So basically, if we're going to do that, we really need to make a decision today then.
Yeah, and that's a hard deadline. If we miss that deadline, we're done.
While these guys are thinking real quick, if something happens today similar, we're covered, correct?
I have not reviewed your current insurance, so I guess I can't answer that. I don't think we have the current NIRMA policies, do we?
If some civil, hypothetically a civil rights violation occurs today, I'm asking if we're covered.
Don has visited with NIRMA several times. We've had some people that have sent me emails and brought up those same issues, some insurance people in the county, and as far as we know sitting here today, NIRMA has assured us that we have the coverage. What we're lacking here, we have the coverage and we have all the right coverage in place, and we actually have written confirmation from them.
Okay.
We have emails from them.
Along with that, then, if something happened 2 years ago, are we covered?
As far as I know, because we haven't changed insurance.
Okay, so what you're saying is the insurance company that was in place 2 years ago would cover us for what happened then. So I guess I don't know why we even need back insurance. If whoever was insuring you at the time protects you, okay, that's this person. If something comes up, your current insurance carrier protects you. Well, something came up and we had an insurance carrier. I guess from a common sense perspective, I don't understand why we aren't covered by our current carrier. This is a problem today, not a problem 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's so there's two different types of insurance policies. There's a claims made policy, which would be when the claim is made against the county. That's the policy you have to look at to see if there's coverage or not. And there's also what's called occurrence-based coverage. So if the event, the underlying event, occurs during the time when you have coverage in place, then there's coverage underneath that policy. And this gets sort of deep into the weeds of both cases. But with respect to NIRMA, you have both an occurrence-based, we have both an occurrence-based theory based on that law enforcement liability coverage, which was actually written in 1997, but had a backward-looking period. But it was occurrence-based. And then we also have a claims-made theory, too, against NIRMA based on their what's called the public officials liability coverage. That doesn't necessarily cover the sheriff's office, but it covers the county attorney's office. And so our theory there is that because the county attorney was initially in the case, there should have been at least a duty to defend, and that gets into the bad faith arguments that Joel mentioned. On the EMC policy, that's an occurrence-based policy, and so that's when we focused on that one because it was in place in 1989.
You raise a question, Eric, that I think other people have raised to probably many of you. And I can tell you that one of the arguments we made in the Gage County versus EMC case to Judge Nelson was that if she granted EMC's motion for summary judgment, that would essentially mean there were significant holes in the county's coverage, i.e., no coverage for alleged deprivation of civil rights by the sheriff's deputies. That it, if she said it wasn't covered under the basic commercial general policy, then it wasn't going to be covered because there also appeared to be language under the next layer of coverage that would exclude that more clearly. So we have done our best to raise the very question you raise in terms of legal arguments, and I don't want to speak for the appellate team because, again, Bacon is our man on that. My sense is we would continue to make that argument that when a county buys a package of insurance coverages from an entity like EMC that at the time and still today insures a lot of counties, you would reasonably expect that you would have coverages for these types of allegations.
And if we're claims-based, if we're both with NIRMA, if we're claims-based, if I understood that right, we're claims-based and occurrence both, the claim didn't happen then. The claim's happening now. So why is NIRMA not?
It's when the claim is initially filed, so it would actually be back in, we'd go back to 2009. It's not throughout the pending time period of the claim. It's when the claim is initially filed. That's the coverage that you would look at. So the policy that we're actually focused on there is the policy that was in place in 2009.
Part of the difficulty is the length of time we're talking about also. And we obviously have arguments with NIRMA. But I think it's fair to say that when you're talking about convictions in 1989 and claims and lawsuits in 2009, that does present some issues that are hard to fit into your traditional framework of coverages. Again, that's not to say that NIRMA's right about any of its positions. It is to say that these kinds of claims for the person who's exonerated years and years after they were convicted are difficult on a number of levels.
These two gentlemen are so eloquent in passing that on. My opinion and my plain speak is if it's a $30,000 bill versus a $30 million bill, things are a little different. And I think that it's hard for me to get past the fact that there's some attempt to mitigate any future damage in the state of Nebraska with all the counties and municipalities that NIRMA covers. And I appreciate everything that you're saying, and I track and I follow, but I'm thinking if it's $30,000, it's a lot less of a deal than $30 million. They're businesses.
Who was our carrier in 2009?
NIRMA.
When the claim was filed?
It was NIRMA.
Claims-based seems like the claim was filed when we had NIRMA.
And they're arguing that there are certain exclusions that apply. And
is that when there's a lawsuit against us?
That's when it would trigger the questions whether certain exclusions apply.
But that's what I wonder, though. I mean, basically, it's like one of us saying, hey, this road's rough. Well, that's city. That's township. They're pointing the finger somewhere else. That's where I question, are we covered now? Because NIRMA's done nothing for us. Nothing.
One of the arguments that we are making, and that really hasn't been part of the motions ruled on by Judge Nelson to date, is the idea that an insurer or a risk pool ought to err on the side of initially defending, so that in 2009 the proper response was, we're not sure how all of this shakes out. We think there may not ultimately be indemnification or payment for the claims of the judgments, but we are going to err on the side of providing you, Gage County, with a defense And that is one of our primary arguments, certainly at this point, that if nothing else, NIRMA should have provided a defense given the allegations made by the members of the Beatrice Six, given, and I don't want to get too deep into this, given that there are some things that the Beatrice Six alleged that maybe didn't get proper analysis in 2009. Hard to look back and say if they'd done something different in 2009, how would things look now? But we are pursuing that avenue of argument.
Any more questions? Otherwise, well, we want to go into closed session here.
I do have one before we do that.
Before we vote on.
And that is, how long would it take to review our current coverage and make sure that we are adequately covered and, you know, give us some advice on that? I mean, we think we are, but you've got a better opinion than we got.
As long as nothing happens, we're covered.
Yep.
As long as we don't get sued, we're fine.
That's right. Yeah.
I haven't given a lot of thought to that. Do you have any thoughts, Joel, on how long it would take to do a coverage review?
Truthfully, not that long. If the current NIRMA package is similar to the NIRMA packages that we have reviewed as part of the case, I would think that probably... I always say these things, and later Bacon tells me I have too optimistic in my estimates. 10, 15, 20 hours, something like that. I don't think it would be that difficult to go through it and to say if this type of claim were filed today alleging an act of this type in this year, it appears that you do or do not have coverage for it. Again, you know, just to remember, part of the issue here is that, as happens with a lot of organizations, including counties, over time, the coverage has changed from this carrier to that carrier or that carrier to the risk pool, and that is another set of complicating factors we have. I don't think it would take that much time.
Yeah. I think it might be something we need to consider because we don't want to leave the future board with what we've inherited.
Well, Myron.
That's an excellent point.
The problem is you're going to ask them to do something that's impossible for them to do because what this instance happens 2 years down the road, X instance happens, we don't know what them conditions are. So how do they know if they – I mean, how are they going to be able to check all of our risks that are out there as to whether or not we'd be covered because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. I can almost assure you, you know, and this is – I was actually going to hit on this stuff after we got – through everything that Joel and Joel wanted to talk to. You know, I've heard several times, you know, what Eric brought up, you know, well, if you had coverage here and you had coverage here, why wasn't there coverage? And the other thing that I've heard a lot of is well, why didn't the county board have coverage at that time? Why did they leave us? I can assure you, I can't remember who was on the board at that point in time when that transition period was made between insurance carriers. But I know most of the people that were on there then, they're good people. They weren't silly people by any means. They weren't going to leave the county sitting here. They didn't think they were leaving the county here with no coverage on something like this to come up. So in order to, I mean, not saying I don't want to do business with you guys, but to spend 10 or 20 hours going and telling me that we got coverage on something that we don't know what's going to happen in the future, I think that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, and I would agree, Gary, with a lot of what you're saying there, but you're right. They intended to do right, you know, and to leave coverage. And it probably also goes back to what Eric says, you know, because of the size of the claim, they're looking at every loophole they can to get out of paying and not set precedents. But I'm also thinking maybe it's worthwhile taking a look at it just to make sure we don't have some loophole that we don't want.
I would agree because I think the board back then, I would concur with your account of the folks that were there, but they didn't know what they didn't know.
Right.
And to at least do some due diligence and say that we went through this process, we believe this is where we're at, because until things are tested in the courts and you get somebody's opinion, we don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's planning and zoning. It doesn't matter whether it's a civil rights case. We think we know something until somebody else takes a look at it, and then we're told what we're going to do. So
I think there's a lot of merit in at least going through that exercise, and 15, 20 years down the road, we can say we at least made the effort, because we don't know what we don't know now. We don't know what took place 5, 10 years ago that might come up that isn't even on our minds now. That's
we need to buy some type of back insurance or something for just in case, because what makes me think of it is you just said if the NERMA policies that we've reviewed are similar to these, well, what I hear in that is if the NERMA policy is similar to these or this, we're going to end up in a lawsuit with our insurance carrier again if something like this comes up, because...
And the reason why it's so important is roughly now 20% of our levy now is going to go to a judgment that will not benefit any citizens in Gage County. And that's where it's so important. Outside of the painful judgment that we have to pay, it's looking forward and saying, how do we mitigate our own damage in the future by at least going through that exercise and trying to hold you to 10 to 20 hours? That might be one of our cheapest expenses for the community down the road.
Good point.
We have, from the other side, too, from... If someone is a victim of some sort, I mean, just looking at this from
sure.
the other side,
right.
If this had been set up, you know, someone, if there is someone that's done wrong, it protects that county member in the future potentially as well.
We have not seen anything suggesting that any previous board passed on a type of coverage that they should not have passed on. Again, in 1989, the county had a package with EMC that included 3 different policies, a standard set that other counties had at that time. The evidence in the case against EMC is there was not some other policy that they offered that would have specifically said, we will cover your deputy sheriffs for X, Y, and Z. So we have seen nothing indicating that any of your predecessors on this board dropped the ball in terms of not getting types of coverages that counties in Nebraska would typically have. And again, we've got plenty of disagreements with NERMA about how it handled this situation, but the idea of a county trusting that it's going to have the right types of coverages by going with NERMA seems pretty reasonable, because yep. that's what NERMA does.
So, well, I, as we've talked about this, I think Matt indicated, if this was a judgment clearly within the limits of a regular policy that all the counties have, we probably wouldn't be where we're at. Better be so afraid. And I talk about the vendors out there. This is unbelievable when you have 2 issues. Number one, a $30 million judgment. And just, this, you know, a lot of coverages wouldn't handle that. Number two, you've got civil liability through a policymaker as an elected sheriff. Not to speak ill of the dead, but my gosh, that scares the living daylights out of me. As a county attorney, I don't set policy for this county other than what criminal cases are filed. That's it. And I certainly don't set policy for this board. They set policy for the county when they sit as a governing body, not as individuals. It has to come from this body. So that's what, and I'm surprised the decision hasn't sparked more concern across the country. Because of, you know, the magnitude of the judgment and that issue alone, that you know, somebody out there can set policy that maybe not is not accustomed and certainly doesn't represent the county in that aspect. So, and I would think the legislature is going to take a look at this thing, you know, because they know some of the stuff you guys have talked about as far as how the Constitution is written. And is providing some liability protection for the taxpayers. So we'll see how that comes in. Legislatures
Gary.
Move slower than courts. Yep.
Gary?
So with what you said, since we're in open session, would one of you like to just explain to the public as to why there is no coverage for Gage County in this case or in this instance? Because there was coverage prior, there was coverage after, Why is there no coverage? I mean, that is the question that we all get a lot of.
Every day.
Yep. We'll do our best. This comes with an important caveat, which is in no way are we saying there isn't coverage. I mean, we're actively advocating that there is coverage.
Right.
What I can tell you is that so far the judge has said that there, for a couple reasons, there aren't coverage in a couple areas. As Joel mentioned earlier, one is still up in the air. It hasn't been set up for any, teed up yet for any type of action by the court. So with that very important caveat, what I can tell you is that with respect to the insurance policy that was in place in 1989, you had three layers of coverage. You had a commercial general liability policy. You had that is an occurrence-based policy. So it covers events that happened during 1989. You had a claims made, what is essentially an errors and omissions policy that was called a linebacker policy, and then sitting above both of those was an umbrella policy. With respect to the, on that coverage, with respect to the commercial general liability policy, within it, there is an exclusion for professional liability. So it doesn't cover professional liability. And the issue in that case is whether or not law enforcement is a profession. And so far, Judge Nelson has answered that question, yes, that it is a profession. Because there's that exclusion there, that is, there would be no, according to Judge Nelson, there would be no coverage there. That you would think that would then kick over to the linebacker policy, the errors and omissions policy, but underneath it, there is not coverage for the types of torts, the types of personal injury claims that the Beatrice 6 raised. So things like malicious prosecution, false imprisonment, false arrest, there wasn't coverage there. So even if the claim had been made in 1989, because it's a claims made policy, then it at least appears that there wouldn't have been coverage for those types of things. That's one interpretation of that policy. And that issue really isn't live because we're way out of time for a claim to be made there. But that is a potential concern there.
And the umbrella
just covers whatever. If there's coverage under any of the underlying policies, then there would be coverage under the umbrella.
Under that, with that logic then, what is covered with that policy? If law officers are professionals, is our building custodian a professional because that's a profession? With that kind of logic, no one's covered, period.
The definition of profession that Judge Nelson used, and I don't want to suggest that she was unreasonable in using it. There's a basis for doing it. We disagree with it. But it is sweepingly broad, and that is one of the reasons why we think there continues to be a good faith basis to press this up to the next level and try to get a reversal on it.
That just seems ridiculous. I don't think it'd be real hard for any of us to say, okay, we don't look at exact terms all the time, but we can look at who would be generally considered professionals versus trades. I mean, good thing we didn't have any welders working for us, because that, I assume, would be a professional that's not covered either, or any other trade looking at it like that.
That is a potential concern with the logic that has been utilized thus far by the court.
One of the arguments we made was that if you looked at the other two policies that EMC provided to the county in 1989, so if you look not just at the commercial general liability policy, but at the other two policies for that same policy period, they seem to suggest that professional meant the old traditional meaning, doctor, architect, lawyer. And in the umbrella policy, it even classified law enforcement with other occupations as opposed to professions. So one of our arguments in the EMC case is you should look at all three policies issued for that time period, because EMC itself appears to have provided some guidance on what they thought law enforcement was: an occupation, not a profession. Judge Nelson looked, we think, more narrowly at the commercial general liability policy and applied a particular case that has a fairly broad definition of professional by which a lot of people are professionals, and that was really the basis for her decision. Again, there's not one Nebraska Supreme Court case that either side can point to and say that's the answer for professional in this specific situation. And so both sides have to ask the judge to look at a slightly different set of facts, maybe different language, different lines of case law.
Who provided all three insurance policies?
Those all came from EMC.
So EMC provided all three, and you said if one doesn't apply, it goes to the next. If that doesn't, or if either of those apply, then it goes to the umbrella. So if the three are provided by the same company, one spells it out specifically. The other one basically tells what the definition is without being specific. How on earth would those three not work together?
That is the argument we've made.
I guess my question is, if it's defined in the policy what the profession was at the time that policy was purchased in 89 or whenever, you know, is that not what we go by? Is that not the definition?
And we're getting deep into the weeds here. It's a little more complicated than that. So in the first line of coverage, the commercial general liability policy, it's not defined. The umbrella policy that Joel was referring to earlier is a separate policy. And one of our arguments is, even though that term is not defined in the CGL policy, we should go and look at how it's defined in the umbrella policy. That should be a good indication of what was anticipated. We certainly made that argument. It was not addressed, and she focused on just the fact that it wasn't defined and turned to some other definitions and cases and that are arguably distinguishable. So.
And if you get deep into the grass instead of deep into the weeds, it'd be a lot better.
Quick question on appealing this. If we appeal this, this goes what to what court? You keep talking Nebraska Supreme Court, or
it would go first to the Nebraska Court of Appeals. We would file a petition to bypass the Nebraska Court of Appeals so that we could get it in front of the Nebraska Supreme Court, both with the hope to streamline it, so we don't have to go with that. And it's ultimately, we think it's ultimately going to end up there anyway. So
I end up there, but an approximate timeline of something like this, I mean, 6 months plus minus? Or?
I'm assuming it depends on certain things. Assuming they grant the petition to bypass and we end up in the Nebraska Supreme Court, my hope would be that we would get in the term that's currently ongoing and will end in June. And so then we would hopefully get a decision by the end of next summer. I can't guarantee that we would get within the term. If we're not, then we're looking at some decision probably either early next year, early 2020. Or not early next year, late 2019, early 2020.
You just want to make sure it's done not before January? Is that
no, because people ask that question, well, why are you dragging it on? You know, I mean, we've been asked that a lot. This has been decided this way, why are you dragging it on? And basically, you know, I think back to what Roger, you know, we're trying to make sure we do everything and not leave something unattended to or undone that we should look at. And that here again, though, then this puts us out there basically another 6 months, year and a half. Who knows?
I'll let people criticize me all they want, but we need to appeal.
I think we do too and stuff. But
absolutely.
You know, Matt, Nope, don't need a closed session because you asked about a closed session. I don't, unless somebody else wants a closed session. I think this is something that I will call on the emergency. Basically, we need to vote on whether or not we want to appeal.
I think you pretty much laid it out in your discussions with the two attorneys. Mm-hmm. They've given you their feelings.
And you guys have voiced your opinion that we should go ahead and do this. I think we need we're to the point where we probably need a motion from the board whether or not to go ahead and appeal this.
I would move to appeal.
Second.
A motion by Byers and a second by Lytle. And this, just to make sure, this is which one of those cases?
This would be a case against EMC.
The case against EMC. Okay. Which was the first one that came back or the second one?
Second one.
Okay. First one they talked about today, though.
Yeah. That's what confused me a little bit. It was the first one they talked about today. But it was a second ruling that Judge Nelson issued. That's the one that we will be appealing. Matt?
Just a comment. I really do appreciate you two gentlemen coming here and helping. You know, as we've been, some of us have been on, ever since we've been on the county board, we've done this, and to try and track this and remember and recall and keep all that, and having you all dig into the weeds or the grass, whatever Supervisor Byers likes to call it. But I do appreciate
that. Well, they're lawyers. You expect them to be in the weeds, but I'd rather they were in the grass.
But I think you break it down and make it very easy to follow, even for some of us that have been around forever, and we hear this and we hear that, and we kind of get that narrow definition, which does help, and I appreciate the fact that the media hung around, so hopefully that was beneficial for you all as well.
Once we vote, I do have another question to throw out there just for
any more discussion on the motion to appeal. If not, go ahead and vote 7-0 in favor to go ahead and appeal. So now, Gary.
All right, Joel. So in your guys, just because you guys have a little bit of expertise towards the insurance, In your guys' opinion, is some of this issue created because, you know, in the old practice was that every year or every 2 years you were always bidding out the insurance policy, and then you seen, especially, you know, on the city council when I was there, it seemed like it was always every other year you were going through a different firm. Is that some of the issue that's been created here in this case because there was this trade-off from one carrier or one agent to the next, and that's created the gap, or the perceived gap anyway? I mean, we all in this room, we all agree there was coverage, there should have been coverage, but I mean, is that where the perceived gap is created, or is it just because of the insurance
ethics?
The insurance world, you know, is it that, or is it actually because of the changeovers that were made?
My take on this, and Joel may have a different view on this, but my view on it is that this does, to the extent there is a gap, it's not because of the switchover in insurance that occurred. It's because there might be holes in some of the language in the policy. But I don't think that I wouldn't put that on being because there was a switchover from EMC to NIRMA in this particular case. In fact, there actually, when you guys switched to NIRMA in 1997, and if you look back to that, that's when that retroactive policy came in, which was supposed to pick up liabilities back to that August 2nd, 1989 date. One of the things that's unfortunately true in this case is they picked that August 2nd, 1989 date, because the Beatrice 6 case wasn't on anybody's horizon. And in the NIRMA case with the excess carriers, had they picked August 2nd, 1988, what the theory the excess carriers won on, they would not have had. It appears to be sort of an accident of history that date was picked.
Well, and the reason I ask this is because there's, you know, In the public, you know, there's been different conversation. You know, I've heard different people say, well, you know, I'm afraid to change carriers because I've seen what happened to the county. And, you know, if I change my carriers, what's going to happen to me if something, an accident that I had 2 years ago, am I still going to have coverage or not? I mean, this is the questions that have been brought up kind of due to this case. So that's the reason I ask that is, you know.
Personal thing.
Yeah. I mean, on the personal level for our constituents, that's questions that I've heard constituents ask. But on the other hand, too, is in the future, you know, if we look to go away from NIRMA or somebody else, you know, do you get yourself back in that gap of coverage?
I agree with Joel Bacon on that. Again, part of what we have here is a very unusual kind of case, a very unusual set of claims. And earlier, Gary, you asked, tell us why there's no coverage, or what's a quick summary of why we don't have coverage. Bacon gave a great summary of the EMC issues. Starting to talk about the issues with NIRMA is a little bit like opening Pandora's box, but to try to answer your question somewhat, what we can say is this, that the big gap in time between the events of 1989 and the claims in 2009 was certainly a prime reason that in 2009, NIRMA said, there's no coverage. And I would also say that 20-year gap in time is not something that you're typically going to see come up under your individual auto policy or under your farm ranch policy. The the events of the murder and the prosecutions and the convictions involving the Beatrice Six is obviously an outlier, and that makes all of this very complicated, very difficult, in some ways kind of a perfect storm, if you will. And Bacon points out that August 2, 1989, being a very important date, was, in Judge Nelson's opinion, very important. Again, the argument that I don't want to say too much about now, because we really have not had a chance to fully litigate it in front of Judge Nelson, is...
Yeah, don't hurt our case at all.
How should NIRMA have responded in 2009 in terms of at least providing a defense? At least saying, this is complicated, this is messy, it may take a long time to sort it out, we are unsure whether we would ever have to pay these judgments, but in the meantime, we're going to defend you, county. So hopefully that provides a little more context for your question.
Yep.
Any more questions or comments for him? I'd really, really, really thank you guys for coming down here and being a part of this. I know it looks like it's taken about 45 minutes or an hour or whatever. So, no, Eric, go ahead. Yep.
Quick question then, just to clarify. We are having them just review our policies to take a look. If we're currently covered, or if we need to look into some type of back policy,
would that be a separate arrangement? Because right now, would that be separate? Right, an agreement something we'd have to do later.
Basically, it's a professional agreement. So, I mean, it's something you can talk about. And again, I think they gave you a little bit of idea to think about it.
I think that's something that we can maybe have on the agenda for 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
We can think about it then. Maybe have a discussion and type. Because like Matt said, maybe it's a separate contract. I don't know.
Yep.
It might be outside of the scope of what you're hired here, because I don't know if that's the same dollar amount.
Feel free, if you have extra time, to go ahead and review our policy.
Are you any relation to the congressman? I just was checking.
He won last night?
You're not going
to
get.
Okay, I was watching that. I didn't see how it ended up.
But I think that's something that we'll have going forward. We'll discuss that, and we sure may be bringing that up to you guys. But I think that is basically outside the scope of what our contract is with you today and stuff. So we'll have a discussion on that.
All right.
Going forward, because that's something that I think that's a good point. So anything else here today? If not, thank you guys very much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate you. We haven't talked to you in a while.
We appreciate the contribution of your time and effort.
Your attention.
A nice contribution.
Yep. And I
didn't know about another senator, though.
Oh, well, you got to take care of the new senator.
No.
Anything else for the good of the order today? If not, at 11:48 on the clock, we're adjourned.
Second.
10:48.
Am I third or fourth?